Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source. Today's featured guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor. David Morgan pens the Morgan Report, covers economic news, trends, overall financial health. And welcome back, David Morgan.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be back.
You are going to be doing interesting seminars, online seminars, where you'll be looking at this massive $200+ trillion debt. I'm sure you've heard of Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff at Boston University, and he's been talking $199 trillion to $220 trillion in debt. These numbers start to lose all sense of reality when you get this high. I mean, we're talking 10, 20 times everything produced in the United States by every man, woman, and corporation. These are enormous numbers. Tell us the implications, please.
Well, the implications are that you can't live a lie forever. I mean, I've probably said this many times, but it bears repeating. I mean, if you cannot print wealth, and we can't print our way out of this mess. And yet that's something that hasn't worked. So I don't know if it's Einstein that said it or not. It's attributed to him often, that continuing to do the same thing over and over and expecting a different result is a definition of insanity. So I can clearly state that the banking system at large, central banks in particular, are insane to believe that after the QE1, QE2, Operation Twist, QE3, which is QE to infinity, and the European banks following suit, is going to solve a problem when clearly it hasn't. And yet this is the only methodology that they really have. And then, of course, they have, I guess, another methodology, which is rhetoric. They have the ability to come out in public and talk the markets up or down based on this idea that they're going to change the interest rate, which changes the yield curve slightly on the bond market or the debt markets. But this is all smoke and mirrors. Basically, the curtain on the Wizard of Oz has been drawn back. And as continuing with that metaphor, there's only a few of us, maybe 5, 10%, that have actually pierced through the veil, through that curtain, and seen it's this little man pulling levers like hell won't have it. And nothing's really taking place other than a bunch of, again, smoke and mirrors. The other maybe 80 or 90% are beginning to see through the veil and realize that no matter what is said and what is done, that nothing is changing for the better. And as the confidence factor declines more and more on a global basis, the lack of confidence will cause a run to gold. And that run to gold will spill over into the silver market in a dramatic fashion, because silver is a smaller market and more affordable for those that have lost confidence. Not so much in a monetary system, although that's certainly a big, big part of it, but basically lost confidence in their governments to take care of them, for their corporations to take care of them, for anybody outside of themselves to take care of them. And this is a situation that very few in the Western cultures, the Anglo-American Empire, Europe and America, or North America primarily, is that if you work, this job for 30 years, you've got this pension. If you pay into the social safety net program of some sort, that you will be in good shape, that if you've got a savings set aside within some government bond, you're going to get a certain yield and all these things. And yet none of those things are guaranteed. What is almost guaranteed is that all fiat systems fail. This one is failing. It hasn't failed far enough in every case that the majority has lost confidence. And I don't think at the top of the market, when the gold and silver prices on paper terms are astronomical, that everybody has lost faith in the system. But at that point, for all practical purposes, everyone has lost faith in the system. Now, can that be circumvented or headed off? And the answer is possibly. But the probability of that becomes less and less and less every tick of the clock. I mean, with what's going on in the geopolitical scene, which you may or may not get into, is screaming that this war mongering that's taking place is more than rhetoric. Bombs are being dropped. Lives are being lost.
Give us an idea whether or not you think this could be an end to the uptrend or it's just a healthy correction.
Believe me, and I don't want to be data-driven, although data does drive some of my analysis, but I say some, not all. I think it's probably, I'm not certain it's over, but I think majority of it's over. I was very cautious when we had gone, 6 months or more into this uptrend, which was very, very enjoyable. Those that were members of the website were getting cautious statements from me as we're going into a top-level consolidation. And I recommended to all of the website members to consider taking partial profits or hedging their positions. And I did it early, which is when you want to do it. You want to do it when you're near the top. You don't want to do it after the fact. And I got a little bit of blowback. I mean, I put out some Twitter feeds about, taking profits and, look out below, and everyone's saying, what below? What's wrong? And some of my own website members, well, if it's only going to be a 30% correction, then, I'm not going to do anything. And of course, I can't trade for anybody, and everybody's an individual. You got to do what's best for you. So I did have a caveat, Chris, and that was it's possible that the trading had changed so much, and it has, that there could be a final move up rapidly. And I explained how it would be done, how it would be accomplished, and basically it wasn't really worth trading unless you were very nimble. But the commitment of traders was so obvious that there had to be a sell-off sooner or later. And of course, it just droned on and on week after week. And, I'm starting to think, could it be different this time? And I stuck to my guns saying, the probability is so high that they will win again. We just really need to take some profits and hedge, or both. And of course, it took place, recently, and the sell-off was rather dramatic. What's interesting so far, and what makes me hesitant to say it's over, is that on a commitment of traders basis, the open interest has dropped enough in gold for me to give a pretty positive outlook that, yeah, it's probably over, or the majority's over. But on a commitment of trader basis in the silver market, it's been rather insignificant, which means that I am not comfortable saying that there isn't more to come. However, the Chinese are back in the market, the SGE, the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which basically has been taking on the long positions that the commercial traders have been selling, or the opposite of the trade, the shorts in the commercials. So more to be determined. I do think it's going to take a bit of time. I was talking to one of my associates before this interview, and he asked me what I felt at this time. I'm a thinking man, but some of this is gut feeling and a lot of experience. And it feels like we must remember that the sell-offs in the metals for this last 4 or 5 years until the bottom, which was, early December or late November last year, we have gotten the lowest print in the markets basically on the last trading day each and every year for several years in a row, which means with this sell-off, are we going to experience that again? And the answer is TBD, to be determined. The rhetoric out there in the mainstream financial press is pretty negative gold, although there's a little bit of positive. And you're also seeing some well-known, pretty savvy type of investment firms that are actually coming into the gold market, Dreyfus being one that made an announcement today that they might be looking into the sector. So it's stronger than it's been. I am convinced that the bottom is in. And how patient do we have to be? Is this going to be a quick turnaround of, a few weeks? Or are we going to have, months ahead of us where some of the newly arrived to the bull market next move up are getting discouraged after a few months and decide to bow out?
You could see, as you've written recently and talked about, a potential V-bottom near the 200 period, the XAU gold and silver. All three found solid support. I'd like to move on to junk silver. You've been a big proponent, as have we. When times get tough, it doesn't take an even great depression or great recession, as we saw in 2008, 2009. Barterability, the usability of your precious metals. I mean, you might have a giant stockpile of silver, and we hope all our listeners do, in some warehouse somewhere or hidden hopefully on the premises, underground, who knows. You really can't take a 1,000-ounce or 100-ounce bar down to the local store or to your neighbor and say, hey, can I buy a couple bags of grain or wheat or whatever it is that's going to help you and your family get through these difficult times, pay the mortgage, pay the rent. Junk silver pre-1965, you know, U.S. silver coins do have a tendency to hold their value. People trust them because they're obviously de facto real money, and they have that silver backing, oftentimes 90%, and you can get them in very small denominations. One dime, you know, is basically 1/10 or 1/11 of an ounce of silver, can be found at fire sale prices.
Well, Chris, you did an excellent overview, and I'll just give you the rule number one of the 10 rules of silver investing. When I was asked to write the 10 rules of silver investing so many years ago for the investing rules book, that were really, it's kind of an honor to be in there because there were some really notable investment people that were asked. I mean, Investing Rules is a global investor book, which includes tactics, strategies, and insights relied on by 150 of the world's most respected financial experts. So to be held in that class is kind of an honor. But, you know, I just started right off the bat with the worst case. And so rule number one, when all else fails, there's silver. So if the grid goes down, the banks close, there's a bank holiday, the stock market, circuit breakers pop. I mean, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm saying if something similar were to occur, if there's a hurricane in your area, I mean, there's other scenarios that doesn't have to be global or nationwide or even statewide. It could be, you know, it could be an event in your city or whatever. So anyway, when all else fails, there's silver. That's rule number one. And I go on to state, no one likes to be a prophet of doom. But the simple truth is, silver is the world's money of last resort. Should a severe economic collapse occur, leaving paper assets worthless, silver will be the primary currency for purchase of goods and services. Gold will be a store of major wealth, will be priced too high for day-to-day use. Thus, every investor should own some physical silver and store a portion of it where it's accessible in an emergency. I mean, I think that's pretty succinct. Certainly, I would, if I was going to change that, the only thing I would change is that should a severe economic collapse occur or an emergency situation locally, because again, it doesn't have to be global or nationwide or even statewide or countywide. It could just be, you know, your situation in your little hamlet somewhere. And is everyone going to take a silver dime? And the answer is probably not. However, it's pretty easy to negotiate real silver, especially in an emergency, as a barter mechanism well beyond almost anything else you can name. And it's been done, you know, time and time again. So certainly thanks for bringing that up. In these trying times, I think it behooves everyone just to think on their own. You know, you can agree with me. You don't have to. But there isn't much harm in owning, you know, let's say face value, $100 in silver dimes. I mean, not only do you have an investment potential that could go up, but you also have an item that, in the case of an emergency, it's pretty handy to have it.
A handful of silver dimes, you can pick them up anywhere. If you don't have a coin shop near you, you've got eBay. If you don't have eBay, there's 100 other places. What a fantastic investment. You can still get them sometimes at spot. It could be invaluable. Let's move on to something more timely. The Chinese yuan. You know, it was recently added to the SDR. It's now alongside with the greenback as a reserve currency. Of course, the IMF promoting. I'd like to know what you think this might mean for gold miners and physical precious metals on a forward basis. We have a new contender for reserve currency on the block.
But what it means for the miners and the precious metals, I won't comment on because I'm still studying the situation, but I can give you probably even a bigger, better picture. What it really means is the Chinese are in no rush to have a gold-backed yuan or have gold in the currency system. It appears, at least from all of my analysis and those that I have, let's say, over in China, that the Chinese political elite are very happy to go along with the Western banking institutions and play the currency game just as far as it'll go, which comes back to our initial discussion, where, you know, continue to do whatever doesn't work in the currency markets. So in other words, you know, print more fiat, even though it's not working. So now that the Chinese are in the game, so to speak, or welcomed in by the Anglo-American Empire, and they're allowed to sit at the table, as a metaphor, with the SDR, and the SDRs can be issued on what's called an MSDR, which is a marketable SDR, which is basically a bond, and the Chinese can opt some of their U.S. dollars and create SDRs. This gives them a lot more clout, where they can continue to play the currency game. And if you read Jim Rickard's book, I think that he's honest about the SDR. He pretty much makes a case that there is no subset that's responsible for the debt of an SDR. I mean, the responsibility of the United States debt is the U.S. taxpayer. I mean, every U.S. taxpayer owes $165,000. Well, good luck getting that. So unless everybody's got a spare 165K sitting around, you know, good luck getting it paid back. So just continue to go further in debt, borrow more. So the idea with the SDR is that just the banks hold the debt and they aren't, you know, there isn't any populace that's responsible for it. So you can make this charade continue. And I don't want to misquote Jim. I don't have the book in front of me. It's not on my desk this morning. But he basically says it's going to work as long as you can fool most of the people. It's my words, not his exact words. But that's the idea that he gives in the book. In fact, he says it about three times in about as many paragraphs that, you know, the SDR idea gives the bankers another mechanism to continue this, I'll call it a game, this system of printing money and prosperity, quote unquote prosperity, by continuing the system. So I said a lot to say this. I think that Chinese are very happy to go along with that system. Where I'm not convinced is that the Russians are. I think Mr. Putin is of a different mindset. And I think he is, and I don't want to sound like I'm anti-American. I mean, I love my country, but remember, love of country doesn't mean love of government. Mr. Putin is a situation where I'm not sure that he is very favorable to this whole SDR situation. And the BRICS, of course, are not. And, of course, that includes China. So it's a bit of a conundrum, you know. What's really going on here? Is it spy, counter-spy, triple spy? We had double agents, triple agents. I really don't know. I really have looked at it as hard as I possibly can through my lens and the people I know and the people that I trust. And there's many in our community that think it's a big setup. The bankers are sitting on top. It's just a problem, reaction, solution. That it's going to come out with a global currency, a global system, and all the elites are going to sit on top and laugh at us. I am not buying that totally. I do believe that there is a breakaway. Now, whether it's the BRICS or Russia alone or part of the BRICS, I really don't know. But I don't think that they're all cozy. I mean, just look at what we know for a fact. What's going on between the neocons and Russia is frightening as heck. We already touched on it once, but this is not just drums of war. This is getting very, very serious.
Just read an article across the wire that Russia is insisting that all of its students are returned home in line with your idea of the drums of war. They're preparing. They're not just talking. That's not just saber rattling. They're concerned that something big is coming. I'd like to talk a bit about the Metropolitan Plan, which I still feel is not getting a lot of play in gold circles. A sort of a cabal of folks who are planning for negative interest rates, NERP rates, in the United States, where we would follow the path of the ECB. And of course the BOJ, and now the PBOC, the People's Bank of China. That's for the big lenders, the overnight lending rates, where we could see policymakers make an abrupt U-turn in our overnight lending rates.
Yeah, the best article is by Porter Stansberry, and it's in the Crux. You can Google it and probably read it. I will comment on it. Certainly, one comment I've made, probably haven't made enough in the public domain, and perhaps not even in for the website members, is the bankers seldom lose. This is a fact. What they basically do is when the system collapses or is collapsing, they have this big meeting with, you know, the G7, the D20. You look at it after post-World War II with Bretton Woods, and they set up a new system. And so if you look at the Metropolitan Plan, basically there's three bullet points. And the first thing you have to understand is the world system of paper money is unraveling. Well, anyone that listens to a show like yours knows that. The second thing is that as the crisis unfolds, people in and around government who understand how to use the country's gold will be reestablished in the financial order. So that's something that, as you said, isn't talked about very much. Now, the question I ask on that second bullet point is, who has the gold? And this is where we come back to the China and the SDR, because at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be a poker game where you can bluff and say, I've got this much gold. I really think, maybe not on a publicly disclosed basis, although that'd be the most transparent and the most fair way to do it in my estimation, perhaps in a veiled way. And it's my contention that very little unencumbered gold exists is owned by the Treasury of the United States. And a great deal is owned in the East, particularly China, Russia, and India. So then the third bullet point is, the third thing you have to understand is that government will almost surely do something to prevent you from buying gold when the panic comes. So as this unravels and as the, banking elite try to maintain their power by last chance efforts, which means probably implementing gold into some portion of the new currency system, whether it be tied to the SDR, whether it be backing of bonds, whatever. There's a lot of things that could take place. I believe it'll be some type of gold cover, which means it'll be partial backing and not fully exchangeable. It will be amongst the bankers only, and gold is implemented to gain confidence on a global basis. But as far as really being sound money again for the masses, you can rule that out in my view. You could protect yourself. So the third point is that as this is implementing or being implemented, there are several things that could take place. One would be, one, the system will take care of itself. The paper price of gold could get out of the ability of the average person to even buy an ounce. That's one. Another one is a high taxation on it. Another one is preventing it from being bought due to certain edicts or mandates by government or whatever. So the idea here is that this system, when they have to go to the ace in the hole, the last resort, the last thing they can do, the one they really don't want to do, the one after the currency system / SDR, if it works, plays itself out, then you can pretty much bet your bottom dollar that gold will enter into the equation in some way, shape, or form. And you should be or could be positioned prior to that and be very grateful you did. And let me caution somebody, or should I say everyone listening, and most know this without me voicing it, but some people get the idea after listening to somebody on, you know, the precious metals and get the idea that this is, you know, the only way to protect yourself and to be safe is to get precious metals. Well, that's probably a true statement. But when you buy life insurance or house insurance, fire insurance for your home or automobile insurance, you don't put everything into it. You put in what you need. And that's what I like to stress. I mean, 10%, when the 10 rules of silver investing, when I wrote that, rule number 10 is too much of a good thing is too much. That's kind of a rough quote. I forget the exact wording. And so 10% is enough for most people. So, you know, a handful of silver coins, maybe, you know, a little bit of gold if you can afford it, that type of thing, doesn't mean that you have to overdo it. And this is a problem that I've seen again and again and again, is that people, and some with very, you know, very successful people that have, you know, going concerns, good small businesses, make a, you know, fairly substantial amount of money, and they overload in the sector because it makes sense. But they're playing kind of on their fears, and I don't want to put on, you know, anybody's fear. I don't like, you know, playing the fear card. I'm sure I come across that way at times. I don't mean to. These are, you know, until they happen are hypothetical, but many of them have happened in history. So I don't want to downplay it too much. Probably overtalked it, but is this viable? Yes. Will governments go to gold? I think they will. How will it take place? I think this Metropolitan Plan gives a pretty good outline. I think if you're interested in it, you should, you know, Google it and read it for yourself and determine what you think about it.
Any other topicality that you'd like to add to the discussion?
Well, what I would like to do is urge everybody to go to the new domain, themorganreport.com. Get on our free email list. All we need is a first name and a primary email address. And I will send you for free the Riches and Resources Report, which gives you two movies to watch and a lot of other information. One is on stacking silver and gold in a very convenient manner. But the two movies are The End of the Age of Empire. It's called the Four Horsemen film. And the second one is The Empty ATM, which is a documentary about the financial, or I should say the currency crisis that occurred in Argentina in 2000-2001. So those are two movies worth watching, let's say, over the weekend, especially if you have somebody in your family that doesn't really understand the dynamics of where we are in the global economic system and what's going to take place in the not-too-distant future. It's for free. You get on our free list. These are gifts that I've put together for everyone, and it's certainly something that I would like to see more and more people, you know, come into the fold, so to speak. On top of that, you'll get mailed once a week with our insights. And I'll admit we do some advertising on that list. I basically, you know, I needed to stay alive during this 4 or 5 year bear market. And believe me, without our free email list that we could use as a revenue source from time to time, without that, you know, I might have gone out of business like many of my compadres that are no longer publishing in the gold newsletter space.
This is a go-to resource. David Morgan, we're going to look forward to having you back on the show in 2017.
Thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.